This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Our guest today is biographer, scholar, librettist, poet, Herbert Martin. And here's an opening poem. Here's Herbert.
His father taught him a few lessons. Although he never questioned once the underpinnings of his truths, he spoke about everything, riding the back of a segregated bus, drinking colored water, entering designated toilets to cast away personal waste. He had to learn to devise a plan to discover if the architecture of what he said was true. By the time he knew the answers, his father was dead.
The voice of Herbert Martin. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we're together at the Library of Congress. Herb, I know that poem, and the one thing that struck me when I heard it the first time was how you changed a situation which was heartbreaking to one with a surprise, because the poem is a redemptive poem.
Thank you, yeah. I was hoping that it might be that. And, you know, the little story that I added things to it, but my father, once we were in the north, took me on a bus ride downtown, and I had just come from the south, and he got me on the bus, and I sat down in the back of the bus, and he came back, and he said, "You don't have to ride the back of the bus anymore." And I had to try and figure out if what he was saying was true, because I had heard for 12 years, you know, you have to go to the back of the bus and not cause any trouble. And so that's what I did. But once we were in the north, he didn't explain. And so I had to discover whether or not I could do this thing with no explanation at all, or no history or no reasoning or anything like that.
And before you could understand it, he was gone.
He was gone.
Dr. Herbert Woodward Martin. He's been associated with Paul Laurence Dunbar for many years. We're going to talk about a new book we're celebrating today. And he has collected the uncollected work of Dunbar in a book entitled In His Own Voice, Ohio University Press. But Herb is also many, many other things. Professor Emeritus, University of Dayton, librettist, a magnificent singer, and a poet of national acclaim. So we're going to try to cover a little of all of that. Since Paul Laurence Dunbar is in my hand, this beautiful book, In His Own Voice, where you collected things that had never been in print before, tell us who Paul Laurence Dunbar was.
Dunbar was born in 1872, and he died in 1906. So next year will be the centennial of his death. And so lots of things are beginning to happen. There'll be a conference in California. We will have one in Dayton. And I think in Dayton there will be a kind of year-long celebration. And I'm doing a kind of farewell performance of Paul Laurence Dunbar, because I've done it for 33 years.
A one-man show.
Yeah.
And I thought
that would be the nice time to for me to retire from the show.
I doubt it.
Well, you know, 33 years, and I thought symbolically that's when Dunbar passed away, and so why not end it then? He was a very young man when he died.
I couldn't get over it. When I read this book, first of all, I want to thank you for the chronology in the front.
Oh.
Because
yeah.
I needed that.
Ah, okay.
I was in a maze, and I just loved the way you put exactly what he did and when he did it.
Mm-hmm.
That set the cornerstone for the book.
Sure.
But I could not believe that the man wrote for only 14 years.
That's right. And when you think he graduates high school at 18... and then he's dead within the next 14 years. And in that time, he wrote four novels, four books of short stories, and 12 books of poetry. And it's an incredible, you know, he must have been writing night and day.
Like you do.
Yeah,
like
I think
you do.
So. Yeah.
And I would love to hear a little bit of Paul Laurence Dunbar, for which you are so famous.
Well, let me give you one of his, I think, prophetic poems. And this is called A Negro Love Song, and I think it anticipates rap. I seen my lady home last night. Jump back, honey, jump back. I held her hand and I squeezed it tight. Jump back, honey, jump back. I heard a sigh, a little sigh. I seen a light gleam from her eye and a smile go flitting by. Jump back, honey, jump back. I heard the wind blow through the pines. Jump back, honey, jump back. The mockingbird was a-singing fine. Jump back, honey, jump back. And my heart was beating so when I reached my lady's dough that I couldn't bear to go. Jump back, honey, jump back. Now I put my arm around her waist. Jump back, honey, jump back. I raised her lips and took a taste. Jump back, honey, jump back. Love me, honey, love me true. Love me well as I love you. And she answered, "'Cause I do." Jump back, honey, jump back.
What a range your voice has. That's Herbert Martin, and he's reading Paul Laurence Dunbar, a very famous poem. You know, you bring up a whole panoply of difficulties in American letters with Dunbar. Would you, first of all, call him the father of African American literature?
Well, he's certainly the first to be recognized in this country, born in this country of African-American parentage, and he manages to become a literary figure. And he is the first to use dialect in a way that I think expresses the black African-American humanity that was so long denied in the earlier works.
And yet, at the same time, that's a very double-edged sword for him.
Yes.
Because a lot of people did not see the satire, as you point out in the book, did not realize that he proved that he could write a play in grand English, 18th century English. You taught us that.
Sure.
And so dialect for him was a choice.
Yes. And part of that was because he heard the language used. And I think, you know, when we get back to it, we come to the roots that the language is spoken. And even the poems in early English were oral poems. And so a good deal of Dunbar comes from that oral sensibility.
But I know that you also have received criticism for reading poems in dialect.
Well, I think the black literati of the time really was afraid of dialect. And there's a little bit of dark cast and tinge to using dialect. It seems to suggest something second rate. And I think that that's why people like Du Bois did not want black people represented in dialect. He suggested to Langston Hughes that Hughes should not use vernacular speech at all. And so we get really those high standard English poems like The Negro Speaks of Rivers. But thank goodness Hughes didn't listen to him all the time.
And Sterling Brown.
Yes.
Also called.
And those are marvelous poems.
This is who he is. We're talking to Herbert Woodward Martin. And he has authored 6 books of poetry.
That's right.
Yes. And the last book is entitled The Log of the Vigilante. That won the Mellon Prize. That was a national award. And it was published in 2000. Then he won the Ohio Arts Council Governor's Award, and that's for outstanding service in the arts and also for teaching. He has his doctorate of humane letters by the University of Dayton, and he has received the Society for the Study of Midwestern Literature Mark Twain Award.
Yes.
Well given.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we're talking about In His Own Voice,
yes,
the uncollected poems until this minute of Paul Laurence Dunbar, and we're going to hear some more. Here's Herbert.
Here's a very short poem called Theology by Dunbar. There is a heaven forever, day by day. The upward longing of my soul doth tell me so. There is a hell, I'm quite as sure, for pray, if there were not, where would my neighbors go?
What does he mean to you personally? I know professionally that you've dedicated a large part of your life to performing him and collecting him. As a poet, What does he mean to you?
Well, he was the first to go ahead and write. And like all of us, he was working as an elevator operator. But he got the sense and tuned into the fact that people were interested in his poetry. And so he wrote poetry on the side while he worked in the daytime. So in that sense, he's a kind of inspiration that one can get this done if you have this calling. You can do it, and you just have to work at it. You work at it 24/7.
I've seen you.
You know, and that's part of it. So I think I've told myself, if Dunbar could do it, perhaps I can do it too. So.
However, you admit that your early life was almost in avoidance of Dunbar.
Yes, that's true, because I looked so much like him in childhood. And my peers all thought that I was related to this man, and therefore I should go home and tell him to tell the teacher not to make us memorize these poems. And I thought, I kept saying, I don't know him. He's not my relative.
But he was whispering in your ear.
Well, he was. And I had horn-rimmed glasses. I looked like him.
Wow.
And though I fought for many, many years to avoid him, and I did, I think, successfully sort of bury him in my heart. And it was Margaret Walker who brought him back to life when I ran the first Dunbar Centennial of his birth in Dayton, Ohio in 72. And she read Dunbar with such exquisite flair that when she finished, the whole audience just stood all up at once. You would think one person was standing and they just cheered. And I thought, my goodness, I've got to go back and learn all that subtlety and all that music, all that joy, the humor, and the pathos, because it's all there.
And do you know what the word mission spells? That was your mission, you have fulfilled it.
Yeah, well, Herbert, I hope so.
Herbert Woodward Martin. Let's have a little bit more of Dunbar.
Okay. Let me read you another prophetic poem. And this is called He Had His Dream. He had his dream, and all through life worked up to it through toil and strife. Afloat forever before his eyes, it colored for him all his skies, the storm cloud dark above his bark, the calm and listless vault of blue took on its hopeful hue. It tinctured every passing beam. He had his dream. He labored hard and failed at last, his sails too weak to bear the blast the raging tempest tore away and sent his beating bark astray. But what cared he for wind or sea? He said, "The tempest will be short. My bark will come to port." He saw through every cloud a gleam. He had his dream.
Oh, you need the right lungs to read that poem, though. You really do need to project that poem
sure.
the way you do.
Yeah.
You're a singer by trade, right?
Yeah, that's
mm-hmm.
right.
It helps.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Herb Martin, I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're at the Library of Congress, and this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. Herb, let's go back to one of your poems.
Okay.
You get equal time here.
Oh, well, that's awfully nice. Thank you. This comes from a little poem. There was a man in the neighborhood who fed all the wild cats in the neighborhood, or the stray cats. And then, of course, when he died, I began to wonder what was going to happen to all those cats. And so I wrote this poem called Neighbor. Spring is in you, gentle old Jew. You knew isolated hungers like no other communal stomach. Gentle sir, you gathered dispensable chicken parts, carefully cooked and seasoned them, then fed the tribe of cats at your back door. Gentle man, your house is empty now. The cats themselves are dispersed like the wind, searching for the unimaginable corners of your generous hand.
Herb Martin here. We're at the Library of Congress. That was his own poem. From what book?
Escape to the Promised Land.
Now that we are here, it seems so fitting, since I know that Paul Laurence Dunbar hangs out with you in spirit anyway, to say that he worked at the Library of Congress.
Yes, he worked here for several years.
As an assistant
as
in the reading room.
As an assistant in the reading room.
Did you visit the reading room today and see?
Yes, I did.
Uh-huh, but you've been here before.
Yes, but that was a nice thing to go and think, well, here I'm trying to touch this table, thinking he may have passed this way or done this thing here.
But he gave it up to write full time.
Yes, yeah. And then he went on tour to London, where he read for the royal heads. And Ambassador A at the time took him under his wings and made sure that he got to read for as many important people in London as possible.
Boy, that's lucky,
yeah,
isn't it?
That was just sheer luck.
I know. Well, we cannot know what reputation will be remaining after us.
That's
we
right.
don't know what posthumously anybody will be,
sure,
really.
Yeah.
And so, do you feel that a circumstance could have had it otherwise for him? That he could have been not known by the American public?
It could have been, but I think he had a few nice little strokes of luck along the way. His second book got sent to William Dean Howells, who was, by the way, friends with Mark Twain. And Howells reviews Dunbar's book in 1898 in Harper's Weekly. And he says, this is the first African-American born in this country of African-American parentage to exhibit literary talent. And that made Dunbar a household name. And from that point on, everybody knew who he was. And he was able to sell the dialect poems rather rapidly, not able to sell the standard English poems as quickly. And so I think ultimately he said, I think that Mr. Howells has done me an irreparable harm. I've come to believe that Howells made it possible for him to have an American reputation, and had Howells ignored him, he would have struggled on for many, many more years. And given the fact that he had such a short life, it's a good thing that Howells said what he said.
How old was he when he died?
33.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Let's hear something else from Paul Lawrence Dunbar. Herb Martin is our guest, and he is an authority, maybe the world authority on Dunbar.
Well, I hope not. Here is Dunbar's most famous poem, and it's called We Wear the Mask. We wear the mask that grins and lies. It hides our cheeks and shades our eyes. This debt we pay to human guile. With torn and bleeding hearts we smile and mouth with myriad subtleties. Why should the world be overwise in counting all our tears and sighs? Nay, let them only see us while we wear the mask. We smile, but O great Christ, our cries to thee from tortured souls arise. We sing, but oh, the clay is vile beneath our feet, and long the mile. But let the world dream otherwise. We wear the mask.
Do you suppose that poetry is in public domain?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. All of his poems now are in public domain. And I found a number of them, but and they are all really quite lovely pieces, which means that I'm happy to read them.
Herbert Martin is our biographer, scholar, poet, librettist, musician, the favorite of many poets, his peers who love and revere him. And actually, you know more than anybody I know. I have sat on a panel with you when people will say, who began the sonnet, and all of us are scratching our heads, and Herbert said, I think Petrarch. You know, so you are really trained, you're a classically
yeah,
trained man.
Sure.
And so you come at your art on many levels.
On many Well, you know, one of the things that I remember, I sat one afternoon with Alan Tate, and he said to me, because I was very young, he said, you know, you have to recognize the old guys as well as the new guys. And so pick some old guys. And when I heard Dunbar, I picked him. But, you know, it meant going back and looking at a lot of poems. And I had some pretty good teachers when I was in high school and in college. And I read a lot. And my friends who were, you know, aspiring writers and poets as well, if we came across a poet who did remarkable things, we couldn't wait to show that poem all of our peers. Say, look at how he did this with this comma here, or look at what he did with that period, or look what he did when he enjammed the line. And it was that kind of excitement that always kept me going.
Mm, and it still does. Yeah. Herb Martin, I'm Grace Cavalieri. Are you going to give us a little more Dunbar?
Sure. This is a lovely poem about a grandson, I think, and a grandmother, and it is called Opportunity. Granny is gone a-visitin'. Oh, I seen her get her shawl when I was hiding down there behind the garden wall. I seen her put her bonnet on. I seen her tie them strings, and I is gone to dreamin' about them cakes and things on the shelf behind the door. Oh, mercy, what a feast. Soon as she gets out of sight, I can eat in peace. 'Cause I've been watching for a week just here for this here chance. And when I gets in there, I is surely gonna dance. How? Lemon pie and ginger cake. Let me set and think. Vinegar and sugar too. Now that's gonna make me a fine, fine drink. And if there is one thing that I loves most particularly, it is eating sweet things, honey. And drinking sangaree. Nada! Won't poor Granny rail when she see the chef. When I thinks about her face, now I is most ashamed of myself. Well, she is gone, and here I is back behind the door. Look here, my granny done expected me. There ain't no sweets no more. Every sweet is hid away. Job is done up just brown. Person would have thought that somebody thought that there was thieves around. Oh, that just breaks my heart in two. Oh, how bad I feel just to believe that my own grandma believed that I would up and steal.
Herbert Woodward Martin, and there isn't another person like him in this world. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Tell us about the detective work that it took. Just very briefly, how many years did it take to put together his work?
It took about 12 years. I found Herrick, which is written in 18th century comedic standard British English rather than American English.
And is there anything else published that shows that quality of his writing?
No. Oh. The other plays are completely lost. We don't know what happened to the other three plays. But I think that with this play, he really was trying to work himself out of that dialect corner that he found himself painted in.
And you see in your book, in his own voice, you have given much evidence of the fact that he was a virtuoso.
Yes.
And the poem, The Lonely Hunter,
yes,
is like Yeats.
Yes.
So I'm so happy that you showed other facets of him.
Yeah, he has a marvelous range, you know.
I know. It's like the criticism of him is unfair.
Yeah.
And it's like Pound said of Sandburg, cruelly said, little Latin and less Greek.
Yes.
But you know, Herb, you have enough. You have the Latin and you have the Greek. And he had a classical training,
yes,
too.
Yes, he did. When he graduated from high school, somebody had promised money to go to college, but they backed out. And so he took a job and worked as an elevator operator. And that's how he published his first book, Oak and Ivy. All the copies were for a dollar and a quarter. But he paid $125 for that first edition, which sold out, and then it did so well that he published Majors and Minors, and that's the book that landed on William Dean Howells' desk.
So the message here is the world will only believe in you if you believe in you first?
I would think so. I would think
so. And
he
proved that.
And he proved that.
Mm-hmm.
He went to work and proved it.
That would be a lesson learned for us.
Sure.
For everyone.
Yeah. Yes.
This is The Poet, the poem from the Library of Congress. Our guest is Herbert Woodward Martin. We are celebrating the book in his own voice And we are celebrating Dr. Martin as well, because he is a poet who is known and loved and beloved by other poets. Now, that's the acid test. It's what other poets think of you that ultimately matters quite a bit,
yes,
isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm Grace Cavalieri.